All right, welcome to this week's edition of the Williamsville Racing Sports Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM. This is Josh Nagel filling in for Ken Barler, your regular host, who may or may not stop by today, but he's got his hands full. Anyone who follows the show or knows Ken is aware that he's the vice president of the club, Cal Neva. This is the big weekend for the Wing Fest downtown. Cal Neva is a major player in that big event, and Ken's down there doing his best to represent the Cal Neva, cooking up wings for people, and I got to stop by at some point. I said this before, and it, you know, comes off as biased because of my, you know, friendship with Ken and as long as I've known the Cal Neva. But way back when this event started, it's been, I want to say, what, 5 or 6 years now. But the very first year I went down there, and to this day, I think one of the best wings they have is their barbecue blue cheese. It's worth checking out. I believe the very first year it got second or third place, and it's still one of the best with all the competition and everything out there. If you're headed down there this weekend, I would say barbecue blue cheese from the Club Cal Neva booth. Tell them I sent you. It won't get you a discount, but Ken will be happy for the recommendation. So he might not come by, but if he does, we'll have him on. John Stevens, a regular panelist, should be here in a bit. He might be running a bit late. But in the meantime, my fellow panelist is sometimes contributor. Haven't heard from him in a while, though. Tommy Thompson, how are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm always happy to be here. Unfortunately, not having some delicious beer and wings from the booth, but we'll go get that later.
I know, it's hard to not think about it. On my way here, I was wondering if I could make it in time to go down there and get the blue cheese first, but I'm going to walk down there after this because that has to happen tonight.
You know, and I'm glad you said that because I am disgusted by blue cheese.
Yeah.
But they are one of the most fantastic. It's like an infused breaded blue cheese that...
Exactly. You got to try it, regardless of your feelings of it. It's like a salad dressing. You got to try the flavoring because it's outstanding.
So, and I went down there before the show started and talked to Ken a little bit, and the booth... just jam-packed, a lot of people. Jeff, actually, Siri, invented a honey sriracha flavor that is amazing.
Cool.
So,
I did see there's a couple new ones on the ledger this year that I hadn't seen before.
Yeah, they have a maple pecan crunch, a blackberry honey that I'll probably try after the show.
All right.
But they have a couple, but that buffalo blue cheese, I agree, it is amazing.
Great. So Wing Fest, worth checking out tonight, tomorrow. Find your way down there, and there's great vendors, of course, for all sorts of different, goods, and there's music and entertainment, the whole bit. So check out this year's Wing Fest. Stop by, and you'll probably see Ken down there. One other thing to mention, William Hill Pro Pick'em Contest for pro football. It seems like it's a ways off, right? First kickoff is Sunday, September 8th. It feels like you got a couple months to go. But they're releasing the entries and the registration earlier every year so people don't get behind. Now is actually the time to do it. So the Pro Pick'em, which is when you just pick all the teams with no spread involved, is available now. Just the standard same old rules, $25 a pop or $5 for $100. And you just, you can key your teams or whatever. You get multiple entries. At the end of the year, there's weekly prizes for the top winner, full year-long prizes for like first through third or fifth place. And for $20, it's a heck of a deal because you can end up having a pretty good sweat. And even if, I mean, it appeals to the most casual better, and sometimes, Tommy, I don't know about you. Back in the day, in my younger years, I used to take a contest like that real seriously. I mean, I'd get 10 or 20 entries. As life goes on and you have less time, like, I just don't feel like putting in the effort to fill out 20 cards. But these days, I usually get one or two. I think last year I just had one. But, man, I was in the top five. It's just one of those things. Obviously, you've got no room on the kind of pick 'em coin flip games. You can't play it both ways, and I get that, but you just go with the team that you feel the best on. But if you take it somewhat seriously and just sort of value that one card, like I said, I was in the top five standings till the end of the year. Didn't make the money, but it is possible. And we've seen, and I don't know how it played out last year specifically, but in years past, you end up getting the bio info about the winner. William Hill sends it out. And I know for a fact over the past 6-7 years, there's been winners who had one entry several times.
Yeah, which amazes me because there's so many people that max out with the most. And they do right. The mathematical, okay, right. these teams are going to win, most likely guaranteed, but these are the...
And you would think Joe Public stands no chance about that, but they do.
And, I mean, I've never had more than two cards in, and over the last 5 years, there's under a half dozen times that I've won a weekly, and it's always been like $18.32.
Because shared with 67 people.
But
right.
Still, it's kind of cool to go down and be like, oh, I was, 13-2 or whatever it may be.
Right, and you're right. The key is that there's almost usually some funky upsets. If there's not, you're right, that's when there's going to be 100 people splitting the prize. But sometimes there's those weeks where more or less every game sort of follows the script, but there's just one or two there off, and it's like that 14-point underdog that won outright. You got to be the one person in the field that has that.
Yeah.
And that's how you clear the board and win the prize to yourself.
And me, I always feel like it's that guy that goes undefeated when there's that one crazy major upset. That person was a fan of the team and picked them pure out of homerism, just, you know, the 17.5 right. point underdog that covers.
Exactly right. It's like the Cardinals beating the Packers. It was just a lifelong Cardinals fan and they getting the money. But anyhow, that's fun for the week-long action, I'm sure. College is coming up sooner than the NFL. Of course, we'll see William Hill's offerings on that. But in the past few years, they've had that nice spread contest, which I enjoy, a bit of a higher buy-in type of thing where 7 picks against the spread. And I haven't heard they're not having it. I know it's popular. So it's just probably a matter of time till they jump out with those entries, make those available. But right now, Pro Pick'em's available. And, if you haven't signed up for the William Hill mobile account, williamhill.us to get a digital account. And if you've ever been to a William Hill brick-and-mortar sportsbook like we have right here at the Club Calneva, pretty much everything you see on the blue and yellow board is exactly what comes in that digital format. So as soon as you sign up for an account and type in your password, just the whole sports book in the palm of your hand. Can't go wrong, but we've gone over a million times the advantages of having that. But check it out if you haven't already, williamhill.us. Tommy, one thing I wanted to talk about, I know you're a big poker guy like myself. I know you deal and you play. And the last few nights on ESPN, I've enjoyed it, man. Probably stayed up a little too late watching the live feed because I love how far the technology's come with that. Where you're basically watching it live now. You get to see the whole cards. Just a few years ago, they were experimenting. They only showed the whole cards if it went to showdown. It was still largely raise and take it, kind of boring stuff. And then they showed the edited versions, months later. But as long as things keep evolving, for a couple of years now, it's been basically just tape delayed but live. So you're watching everyone's hold cards. There's a 30-minute delay to stop any sort of collusion or cheating. But I think it's great, too, especially if there's like a big pot and the guy wants to know if he was bluffed out. He's going to find out 30 minutes later. Yeah, I love that. He doesn't have to wait 6 months or never know.
Tweet him or text
right.
him or some
so,
sort
so
of.
So you got your friends on, right, if you're being railed by whoever, you got tablets or ESPN on their phone and they're watching the thing, and they're going to find out the information quicker, which, of course, if you're playing all day, the feature table with somebody, get a true idea of exactly how are they targeting you? Are they bluffing you out? You get a great feel for that instead of guessing. It changes the game, and I like it. But I'm sure you're aware the World Series of Poker has actually been going on for like 6 weeks, but this is the last hurrah, the big one, the main event. So this is where all the publicity starts coming in. They start televising it. I've been following it, of course, whether it's the online vlogs, which are so popular now, but like Daniel Negreanu and all these poker players, that's a great source of information, really entertaining now these days, players doing video blogs where they basically videotape their experiences, like mini documentaries. That's fun. And if you're in the poker realm, you already know what's going on with the previous events and who's doing well this year. But the main event is really, to me, what gets your juices flowing. And you and I talked a little bit about the show where, before the show, I used to be down there and I worked for Poker News and a variety of poker outlets. And this is back in the day, though. Going on 10 years ago, probably from like 08 to 12 or whatever. I was down there 4 or 5 years in a row. But I did some stuff for Poker News, and then it's kind of cool. It's just kind of a known thing. Unlike other, and I don't consider poker a sport, so I won't say other sports. But unlike other venues where like you couldn't be covering a baseball team and also be taking batting practice with them, it'd be a conflict of interest. It doesn't happen.
Yeah.
In poker, it's just a given. If you're down there, even if you're covering it, they don't care who it's for. If you're representing a media outlet, it's pretty much expected that everyone's, sort of a dual participant. You're going to cover it and you're going to jump in yourself when you can. So I used to go down there pretty much for weeks or a month at a time during the World Series, and I'd do my assignments by day, and then I'd go out there by night and play whatever. I played some satellites for the main event where it's like, 200 a pop and however many unlimited entries, and they might give away 2 or 3 seats based on the turnout, or $1,000 one table satellite to get a winner take all. Never won a single one. I was trying to win my way into the main event like 5 years in a row. Never happened, but I don't have the 10 grand to just plop down. Well, and I also mentioned to you, I played some of the lowest stakes. They have even lower now. I know they have 300, 500. Back in the day, what I was going was 15 was the lowest, and I enjoyed what I thought were my best games. I mean, I've never gotten a cash in the World Series, so I guess I can't talk. But what I enjoyed is a mix. I like mixed hold'em where there's no limit and limit, and I like 6 max. So they had some tournaments that were both 1500, 6 max, mix. So I would go and play those games, or also just 6 max, no limits, fine. But I enjoyed those games. It was the bankroll type of thing that I could afford. But I got to tell you, it really does feel like if you're you played the local tournament scene here, whatever level you're at, and even if you feel fairly competent and you've done some cashes here, It does feel like you've been called up to the majors from the double or triple A's when you sit at that table.
Absolutely, and that's what we're kind of talking about is we have a local guy here that won a seat from playing the $10 right. tournaments here at the Club Calneva.
Right, and by the way, let's explain that real quick to our listeners. Calneva does this year-round thing, and I've played in the tournaments as well, but they take a little bit out of each entry. $10 tournaments every day with rebuys, but a little percentage of the entry each time they kind of hide away, and they do a ultimate like a year-round promotion where – the person who has the most points in, you build up, you cash in the tournament, you get X amount of points, and then those with the most points play a tournament. Yeah, the winner of that gets the seat.
They typically, it's called the Tournament of Champions, the TOC. They typically are going to have 7 to 8, 9, 10-handed tables. You get drawn in based on how many points you've accumulated over the year, and final table all gets some sort of an entry. You could go to a tournament in Tahoe or one here at another property or whatever, but the main event is the grand prize, and we have a guy from here, Nick Costanzo. He won. He's currently playing right now.
Right. I heard it's his first. It's the third day one. They have so many players that you could play July 3rd. You could play yesterday or today, but it's basically like day 1A, 1B, and 1C, like whatever it is, 3,000 players per day. Pick, you know, whatever, at your convenience. So the last third go off today, and he's jumping in there.
Yeah, and so last I heard, the starting stacks were 60,000, and he was just at about 51.9, which is the average chip stack right now. So hopefully he hangs in there. But like we're talking about, it is like getting called up to the big show, where it's not, you're not playing a $60 tournament at the GSR or the $10 tournament here. As soon as you sit down, those nerves kick in, and you're a little bit shaken.
And you know what? You also, I think a self-awareness is really what needs to kick in at these higher levels, because I thought that myself, and there's even a term I like to use that I heard forever ago, but it applies, and you also got to realize when it applies to yourself, but it's called a hometown hero. When someone does really well, like I used to feel pretty good about myself, like you said, the local, you know, anywhere to like $100 to $500 buck tournament scene, and I cash, and you start feeling your oats, thinking you're pretty good. You go to the World Series of Poker, and you're just a mark. I mean, they love hometown heroes. Like, where you go and you play, and you're feared and you're respected, they don't care about that. They basically see you as a fish. And it's just one of those things where you have to step up and play the big time like that. You have to be ready for a new level. With things you weren't paying attention to in the minor tournaments, the way you look at your cards, the way you look at the flop, the way, I mean, you've got to step up completely. And I'm always curious to see how our guys do. I think this is a great promotion because I've done other ones. I'm sure you're aware various casinos have these pre-roll type of things where you build up the points, but not for a buy-in that's so cheap. And what that does here, of course, encourages you to play year-round, because the more you play here, you're bound to accumulate those points. And then you just, like I said, you're bound to probably be qualified for some kind of prize. I'd like to see them go down there. I'd also like to see them do well because, you know, the way the game's transformed and everyone's got the game theory optimal stuff going and all the numbers crunch. But if you're not well-studied and not ready to step up, I mean, it could be a quick – I also like how the structure – we know the World Series, like you mentioned, all the chips. So now you get over 300 big blinds. I mean, it starts – last year, I believe it started 75, 150 blinds, I think, with 100 ante or maybe no ante the first level. But that gives you just a ton of room to play. Kasami, you know how it used to be, like Moneymaker – and even a little bit after that. But there was the old school style of the main event was $10,000 buy-in, and that was what it translated to, was 10,000 in chips. So it was hilarious. It would be 15 $100 blinds, $10,000 buy-in. Right off the top, you got 100 big blinds, which, you know, isn't bad, but by today's tournament standards, that was short stacked.
Yeah.
And you would see these early editions of the main event on ESPN where first couple hours, if you got in the big hand and lost, you were pretty much toast. You could lose 8,000 on the first hand and you were just done. This allows to where if you bust out, you either have to have a major mistake or get completely coolered.
Yeah, and that, I mean, the bigger the blinds, obviously, the shorter you have, and you got to play a little more tight, but it's evolved so much just over the last 4 or 5 years, so much so. We were just down there on Sunday at the Rio. They were doing a Crazy 8 event. And we went into 3 of the 4 rooms, and there was, I mean, if you've never been there, it is ungodly impressive, the amount of tables.
Yeah. It's just
and,
a sea.
I mean, just the levels. They were already at 2-4 with a $500 ante, and that was within the first 4 hours.
Yeah.
So, I mean, your stack's going to go pretty quick.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Of course, as you know, there's things that really they've been doing the past few years to really draw the public in, but the high turbos like Millionaire Maker where, you know, or Double Stack, where stuff, the stacks are okay, but yeah, turbo, you know, 30-minute levels or whatever. But it happens. I mean, earlier this year, who was a guy who was kind of an amateur, one of the Millionaire Makers? I think the entry was 500, and he won like 1 point, you know, one, I want to say just a little over a million, like 1.1 million, I think. And so they're not joking. It's one of those things where, as much as it seems like a crapshoot, at the end of the day, somebody ends up with all the chips.
Well, and like you were talking about, back when you were going down there covering the events, $1,500 was the cheapest entry. Now you're spending $400, you're getting in. There's 5,000, 10,000 people in there. You're winning $40,000. Now you're staying for the main event because you're free rolling in, basically. And it's going to get your hometown heroes that are going to go down there because they're decent at their home game. They're going to pay $400. They're going to get lucky, catch cards, win a tournament. And now they're there all weekend.
Right.
And for all month, actually.
Right. And my the whole reason I bring up that term is because there's nothing wrong, per se, with being a hometown hero, but what you have to know is where you stand with them. Because sometimes you'll see ESPN will do these little tidbits sometimes, or little features during the episodes, and they'll have a group of hometown heroes where it's like just a bunch of guys who play in some league in Ohio or whatever, but they study like crazy. You know, they play every – they take it seriously. They study. They're ready to go. They build up their bankrolls or whatever. The top four guys in their league go to the main event, and they're ready. And I remember seeing a couple things last year where, like, pretty much like all four or five guys from one club cast, so that shows they take it seriously. But again, if you're just kind of kicking butt at the local 40 buck tournament and think you're just going to step in there and cash in the main event, I'm just here to tell you, another thing coming for sure.
Well, and then you get things like I can't think of his name right now, but the guy that was on Jeopardy, the sports bettor,
James Holzhauer.
Yeah.
How did he do, by the way? He jumped into the team thing with Mike Sexton.
Yeah, I didn't see how he did. He got free rolled in by another company because they want the publicity.
Just a promotion, yeah.
But, I mean, he's got the mentality that I think that he could have grinded it out and probably played premium hands and known pot odds and everything to do just right.
And for what it's worth, I didn't see how he did. You're right, it was a promotional thing. But I had heard in all his interviews and everything like that that he used to play quite a bit, that he played quite a bit of online poker before it was outlawed here in the U.S. and that he had quite a background. So I'm curious to see if he maintains a presence in the poker community, especially now that his popularity is so high. But we're going to go off to our first commercial break, so please join us again in just a minute. William Hill Sports Show, ESPN 94.5 FM. All right, welcome back to the William Hill Sports Show on ESPN 94.5 FM. We are at the Club Caldiva Sportsbook. Again, Josh Nagel filling in for Ken Barler, who's at the Winkfest representing the Club Caldiva. But after our first segment, our third panelist has joined in. So, John Stevens, thanks for coming along.
Hey, Josh.
So were you at the Wing Fest?
No, I was working.
Okay.
So that wing sauce on your collar says otherwise.
Well, that's a different wing sauce.
All right.
Yeah, no, I've been being responsible, Josh.
All right. So before the break, though, we did talk a little bit about the World Series of Poker. Tommy and I just seen it on TV. You have the main events coming around, and it's just cool with all the technology now that you see the whole card. It's like you're actually watching it live.
Yeah.
You don't have to wait 6 months for an edited version. I always like to see the first couple days because it really is just such a mix. That's when, I mean, so many different players are coming in, either who won satellites or whatever. It's a mixture against the high-stakes pros, and I like to see how they fare against the top players.
You want to see the guy that pushes one the first hand?
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of funny. What's funny is it's more or less by the book, but some of this stuff is really funny to watch, too, because, a few years ago, a real, real good player named Max Steinberg, I think he finished third in the main event a couple years ago. I think he's final table another. He's a great young player, and he's a daily fantasy player for a living, but great poker shark, too, and I think he's only in his late 20s. But he was at the feature table the other night, and he kept playing hands with this one amateur who happened to hit a few hands early on, so the amateur guy was the chip leader, and they kept clashing. I just thought it was kind of funny because he did some things that were real non-standard, but he was just getting away with it because nobody was getting too carried away. So, for instance, there was like a hand where the guy had like a smallish pocket pair, but the board had three hearts on it, and it paired on the end. And Steinberg had a smaller pocket pair, and he checked it to him. And you would think, man, that was the type you get to the river, just check back, you win that pot. Instead, he put a bet in. And Steinberg, I know he could have blown him off of it so easily, with all that out there. So you see guys making mistakes that don't always backfire, but it's funny to see the quality of play can be a little shaky. But we also mentioned it because we do have our free rolling contestant there from the Club Caldiva. You said it's Nick Costanzo's his name. If you follow our John, I know you
Stanzo.
I was going to say you do a lot of our Facebook stuff, and I don't know. I know the Caldiva Poker Facebook feed's been posting updates. I don't know if we plan to do it as well. But if you're interested in
we'll do it for sure.
Sure, what his progress is, we'll probably be posting chip counts and things of that nature. But World Series of Poker, today's the third day of the main event, and then they take a couple days off. I think they resume Monday with day two. And last year, a cash game player named John Sin won it. I thought that was pretty cool because of the players at the main event. I thought not only did I like him the most in terms of he seemed personable and a great player, but it goes to show you a little experience matters because just 2 years prior, he finished 11th in the main event.
Yeah.
So some players just have that ability to go. But Tommy, is that something you wanted to play? Do you want to play the main event someday?
Oh, I think anybody who's ever played any amount of poker wants to play someday. Like I was telling you, we were down there last Sunday. They have an event called the Crazy Eights. So it's guaranteed 880,000 players. It's every table's max eight-handed. It's $880 to buy in. So it's one of those events that's probably going to be where I'd start if I'm going to go down.
Yeah. So, John, let me ask you something. Let's pretend for a moment that you won the seat here, and you could either go down and play the main event or sell the seat for $6,000. Which are you doing?
I'm playing.
You are?
I'm absolutely playing. Yep. I don't play enough poker. I can, when I'm playing consistently, I'm okay. But I would. How could you pass that up?
Yeah, it'd be tough.
You know, because I
unless you really need the $6,000.
The guy who I sold it to would be on the final table or something.
You know what's funny?
If I did that,
I would guarantee a swap, especially if I was giving him that good of a deal. Says my $10,000 seat for six. You know what? I'm getting 10% of your action or more. Yeah.
I always go back to Steve Dannemann when they said he's easily the fourth best player in their home game.
He was a goof, though. I know what you mean, but I found him hard to root for because he was obnoxious.
Yeah, I didn't like it. I'm just saying that you can go on runs like that.
And Chris Moneymaker, they showed him the other night, and I believe he already busted early because he has a target on his back. But I think that guy's persevered, man. Remember, he's the one who started it all, 2003, so that's 16 years ago.
Yeah.
It looks like he's doing all right. Ken and I talked about this on a show a few weeks ago, but he's completely resurrected his game because at the time, when he won it, for one, it wasn't very good. Yeah. Then they spent like the next 10 years with just a target on his back. Every tournament he played, people just wanted to bluff him and or bust him, and he couldn't even get any traction going. But the past few years, he's really gotten into the game theory optimal stuff, and he's like I said, the people are of the belief that he's this one-hit wonder donkey guy. Look at his results the past few years. He's gone deep in some of the big Poker Stars events. He's gone deep in the Heads Up events. So Chris Moneymaker sort of reinvented himself, and it's one of the funny things that he's now considered the godfather of the modern poker because of the boom he created. And he's evolving. He's getting better. Not like the wayside. But what do you guys think? I think the converse of that, though, people love the poker so much, not only when Moneymaker was playing, but that great table of personalities with your Sam Farhaws and your Dan Harringtons, and even the next couple of years, your Joe Hatchams. You had such entertaining guys to follow, Greg Raymer. People really enjoyed that and jumped on board. And these days, some of the players are so robotic. I feel like they just suck the fun out of it, where maybe they know the math and they know the formulas. Yep. But so you could say, theoretically, if poker is just some equation to be solved, they're solving it better than they used to. But if you're like me and enjoy the broadcast or whatever, the personalities are what drew you in. So how about a little of both? I'm like, okay, you can learn this stuff.
You got to have the Texas
Dolly
there.
Sometimes I'm just dying, John. I watch these high-stakes tournaments like Super High Roller Bowl and stuff where these people paid a tournament that costs $300,000 to get in, and they're playing like just this error-free genius level of poker, and it's great. But not a single one of like the six players even cracks a smile. It's everything's life or death. I'm like, come on. I want to bring back the fun a little bit with the poker.
You mentioned Sam Farha, and that was the most fun about the Chris Moneymaker thing was that one bluff, watching Sammy Farha try to get in his head that whole time, when it's just smiling at him and just trying to crack the code, and Moneymaker was just stoic, just sitting there.
It's still played, by the way. Did you hear the other night? They had a thing before the main event started, but they celebrated like 50-year anniversary, the World Series of Poker, huge banquet in Vegas, and they had an award ceremony, and they invited everyone who was a candidate and had all kinds of categories, but that won for best televised hand ever, and they were playing it on the projection screen.
Man. It was captivating. It was unbelievable. Yeah. I think about it just sometimes. Think about it.
And one thing I think is sort of underrated, I've said this before because he's still doing the commentary and stuff, but Norman Chad needs to be given huge kudos for his role in the development of poker.
I agree.
Back in the day when the first episodes were coming out, he was very much more of the instructor level commentary where he was explaining the rules as it went along. This is what you need to know. This is called top pair. People didn't know.
Which stifles his personality.
I was going to say, but if you watch it, you had to get the basics. He was great with that. But then, of course, well, you're right. He's known for the witty, sardonic humor, which he started splicing in. And these days, he doesn't explain the rules anymore because they figure if you're watching the main event, you know the rules will hold them. But what I'm getting at is how many poker tournaments have you watched that were otherwise pretty entertaining, good players? The commentators just ruined it. Like, they get so many players who somebody won a tournament, so they stick them in the booth, and they're just terrible at it. And what people don't realize is, by and large, poker to watch is incredibly boring on a surface level. It's all folding. Yeah. It's all just stuff that's not necessarily entertaining. What Norman Chad adds to it, his voice, his sense of humor, and general personality makes it watchable.
Yeah.
And then I think sometimes people don't realize how gifted he is until someone else comes along who's bad.
And I like Poker After Dark because they kind of showcase those personalities and let that be the commentary, the interaction between the players.
Well, and that's the best thing about Poker After Dark is the player interaction that you actually get. Norman Chad, by explaining that, having the humor he did, and the fact that ESPN would air basically premium hands. I mean, every action you saw on those tables when it was aired back in the early 2000s was a good hand that, you didn't see the fold. So it got the normal $10, poker tournament player excited about, oh, I could do it. Or somebody who's never even played, oh, I could do this.
Yeah.
And these days they get, guest commentary to come in usually toward the final couple of tables, and they choose some really good players. Like, for instance, Antonio Esfandiari is a great color commentator. So if you just want the pure analysis from the high-stakes players, they're bringing in people who really do know how to handle both sides of it. But another one who's really good, a great player as well, if you're aware of Nick Schulman, who's been they started him off of Poker Go a couple years ago doing the super high roller bowl. I remember first hearing him, not knowing who it was, and they announced it was him with Ali Najad, who's a pretty good play-by-play
guy. Ali Najad's really good.
He's been around a while, even though he's still young. He was at the forefront. He used to do the NBC Heads Up.
Yep.
And so you hear them together, like, wow, Nick Schulman's just a genius in his own right, and he just won, like, an Omaha bracelet as well. So there's room for both sides of it, but I just mean, without that sort of personality, though, poker just – as a spectator sport or game can be like watching paint dry. So those guys, I just feel like the whole Norman Chad influence is underrated. I watched a little documentary a while back on Poker Go that had like his history with Lon McCarron. You know, it was a fascinating thing. You know, before he got the call, you know, Lon McCarron was like a failing Bay Area sports journalist.
Him.
Yeah, he was only part-time, and ESPN used him for like really fringe sports. He was doing like they'd send him out to do little features on, like, underwater lacrosse or whatever these sports nobody had heard of. And it was, like, kind of fringe X game stuff. And it got to where the work dried up. And the sports that hired him for weren't getting great ratings. And they didn't have a full-time job for him. And Lon himself said, I'm not making money at this. He was going to go, like, trade stocks or something. He's like, I'm just quitting broadcasting. I can't make, enough money at it. And he did do some part-time gigs in the Bay Area as, like, a fill-in, weekend guy or whatever. Norman Chad was always known for his national, syndicated. He's a writer by trade.
Yep.
He's known for his nationally syndicated columns, which are very funny. And he knew a little bit about poker. But this little documentary, which is out there, it's great if you get a chance to catch. Only like 15 minutes long. It's on Poker Go, and you could probably find it on YouTube. But they give the whole backstory of how those two guys came to come together. And just Norman Chad just sort of knew somebody. And he even says, the guy overrated. He goes, I know a little bit about poker, but the producers thought I was some poker guru. They wanted to start filming this. He goes, I'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
With Lon McCarron, who had stopped doing, kind of the fringe sports and pretty much lost his job, they then called him back and said, look, we're going to do this pilot thing. It was six episodes of The Moneymaker, the 2013 main event. We're going to start filming poker. We're going to do some maiden episodes. Would you come in and do this? He's like, hey, I got no other gigs going. Sure. So they put those two guys together who had never worked with each other before. And ultimately, that was the beginnings of what's now the pretty iconic pairing. So,
that's awesome. No, now let me ask you one question, Josh, or both Josh, Tommy, and Josh. If besides the main event, obviously, which event would you most want to play if you went down there?
Well, it's crazy because they have all kinds of variations. I told Tommy in the last segment, what I like is I like shorthanded play, so six max, where it's only six players allowed, because you get to play more hands. But I also understand, that the hand value is a little more, and I also just like, the extra room at the table. So I like six max, and I like some mixed hold'ems. But for, like, non-hold'em games, I know Pot Limit Omaha is super popular, but even to this day, I'll make mistakes, not knowing even what my outs are. It's such a crazy game. And I used to know a little bit back in the day. I'll put it this way. The old school poker game, outside of hold'em, I enjoy seven-card stud, which they just don't offer enough. They used to have a Sunday game here at the Cal Neva. I'd come play because it was the only place in town that had a seven-card stud game. So, other than the World Series of Poker, Tommy, where are you going to get in and practice your deuce to seven draw? I mean, you can't triple draw, I should say.
Well, being down there, we went down to Binion's and the Golden Nugget and everything, and they actually offered a couple of those games. You had to sign up and come in Sunday morning at 7 if you wanted to play, but around here locally, I don't think there's anywhere, but either online or you got to go to Vegas.
That's where I learned to play Raz and all that online, but what still sort of sucks for us is you can – WSOP.com, you can still play, but they don't have the offerings of PokerStar.
I unintentionally play Raz when I'm playing for real.
Make the worst hand on purpose and put the money in.
Exactly. So I just end up playing Raz.
On Mondays, has a mixed game on Monday nights where you get to choose crazy pineapple or whatever.
Love pineapple. What I would have said was Omaha would be the game that I would play. I love playing Omaha. I just love – there's just so much to it. There's just so much more. You still get the same basic structure as hold'em. It's just straight up hold'em, but just bigger options, more to do. I love Omaha.
They have a high-low Omaha every Saturday.
Listen, Tommy, I don't need you to tell me what to do on my Saturdays.
I didn't tell you what to do. I just informed you that there's an option of something to do.
I don't need your information.
Okay.
All right.
Get me another beer.
Fair enough.
We were talking before, though, about this whole GTO thing, you know, that stands for Game Theory Optimal.
Yeah.
You hear about it all the time about, you know, blockers and deck removal, and I've talked with Ken before, and he's of the belief, we're of the like mind, that, you know, that stuff's kind of overrated. I know it has a place in the game, and it particularly does dominate these high roller events, but what do you think, just like small ball was all the rage a few years back, and Daniel Negreanu was sort of the pioneer of that.
Yeah.
And for a while, just bludgeoning your opponent, like Doyle Brunson, the power poker was all the rage. Do we think this GTO thing is going to hang around? Because I got to tell you, for instance, Tommy, when I hear one thing that drives me a little bit nuts, when I hear the commentary in a hand, and they're talking about what a guy should or shouldn't do, he's always got queen jack. But he's got the jack of hearts, so he's blocking that flush draw, so he should know the guy doesn't have a flush draw. It drives me bonkers, because I'm like, okay, the one heart that he holds in his hand does make it percentage-wise less likely that the other guy is holding two. But it's not – they talk about it in absolutes, as if it's impossible the other guy could have that. And blockers, are like I said, a pure example Ken and I gave one time, we were talking, like, how many tournaments have you seen, especially old footage, where, say, it was late in the tournament, there wasn't huge depth of the stacks, and a flop came out, say, king high, and two players got the money in, and one had a set of kings and one had ace king. And they're talking about, like, you know, if you simply have, you know, ace king in your hand, it's impossible for the other guy to have it. I'm not a huge believer in – just how much the blockers and stuff are used.
I mean, I agree. It's with the commentators, I don't know what all information they have, so if it's on the fly or anything like that, but it's easy to Monday morning quarterback and see what everybody has and talk about those. But with the aggression of the GTO, you know, theory and slow playing certain hands and stuff, I don't think it's going to go away.
But the beauty of poker is that it's an inexact science. When you take all the analytics and everything like that and turn it into a mathematical equation, that takes the fun out of it.
Yeah, well, I agree. And put it this way,
I mean, it's probably the best way to play that game.
I think, you know, there's room for everything to coexist, but I would like to see them do the GTO thing and have – is it impossible to, you know, think on a high level and still have a sense of humor? But I just put it this way. I wonder, because some of these guys that you see, Steven Chidwick, David Peters, these guys that win all the super high rollers, I mean, they act like they have no pulse. I mean, I can't even I actively root against these guys because they just seem so humorless, so lifeless. Like, come on, crack a smile once in a while. Play, you know, poker is supposed to still be fun.
That's why I can't ever be a great poker player, because I'm too gregarious out there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I have a different strategy of trying to draw them out that way,
right?
By talking. But sometimes I can be stoic if I've had enough.
But that's why I was glad the guy who won last year, John Sindick, he seems like a personable guy. And he was well-known in the cash games, live at the bike. He was an active player. He's a well-known player. But there was a kid, I forget his name now, but he was the chip leader at the final table, a GTO bot. You know, Mike said, thankfully, he started running bad. He made some bad calls. I think he ended up in third. But I was just thankful to the poker bots that kid didn't win, because he was the most lifeless zombie I've ever seen at the table.
1 minute warning.
It would have been, I think, the worst poker ambassador you could have imagined. So I say, yeah, bring personality back to the game along with your game theory optimal strategies.
Scotty, win, baby. That's all we need.
Exactly.
A whole lot of them.
So we're going to go off to our second commercial break here. Please join us again in just a minute. William Hill, Racing Sports Show, ESPN, 94.5 FM. All right, welcome back to the William Hill Sports Show on ESPN 94.5 FM. Josh Nagel with John Steven, Tommy Thompson. No Ken Barler just yet, but maybe he'll stop in a little later. But before the break, we were talking about World Series of Poker. Check it out on ESPN if you get a chance, and follow Cal Neva Facebook feed, our Kenny B Sports Handicapping feed, for updates on our player. Nick Costanza is in there, and we'll see how, if he makes it to day two or ends up cashing in the tournament. That'd be great as well. Field's so big, it's a huge thing to even make the money there. You got to play 4 days just to get a min cash. That is insane. But moving on to other sports news, the thing that's dominated headline, you guys, I'm sure you're worried about the whole Kawhi Leonard decision. It's kind of funny. You guys remember years back when LeBron did his whole thing and they put it on TV and they called it The Decision. At the same time, the guy who couldn't make up his mind was Dwight Howard, and he kept hemming and hawing, and after a while they termed that the indecision,
yes.
Which I thought was pretty funny. I think that we can start doing that with Kawhi. It just figures, man. Like I said, as much as I love the guy's talent and everything, I'm like, this is just sort of an extension of what he did to the Spurs. Just not telling anybody anything, leaving everyone hanging.
Yep.
And it affects everyone's job, not to mention guys like Danny Green. Handful of free agents who are really impacted by, you know, what money does or doesn't go to Kawhi and where they can end up. Everyone's just waiting. As quickly as some people decided, like pretty much as soon as the gun fired on Sunday night and the contracts were being thrown out there, these zillions of dollars, I just figure at this point, could he really be undecided? I mean, the pitches have been made. He knows what Toronto has to offer. He just won a championship. He knows what the Lakers have to offer. At what point, what could be holding this up?
I think there's still a little bit of indecision. I think in his heart of hearts, he wants to go back to Toronto.
I think so, too.
But the allure, you know, he's from L.A. He didn't grow up a Laker fan. We know that. But I think the allure of going back home to play, and it's in the play with LeBron and the play with Anthony Davis, that's something to think about, man. And you know, even if you don't grow up a Laker fan, I get it. You want to play for the Lakers, right?
It's, I mean,
I hate it.
At
but
any
I get
age,
it.
You want to play for the
Did
Lakers.
Still
here,
this is pretty moist right here.
Did not, and okay. Don't say moist on the radio.
Well,
it's one of the 18 words you cannot say.
I was just challenged to do it, and I did it. So go ahead.
So, but. You're right, the lure of playing for the Lakers, the lure of playing for the Celtics. It used to be the Knicks, which I think that's done and gone.
Richard Jefferson said, he goes, nobody cares about the Garden anymore. Just move on.
Yeah. But I think with Kawhi, I mean, how do you leave that San Antonio team? You know,
well,
Pop.
I could actually see that just because I think that he was actually more injured than it was let on. And he didn't feel that they handled it with the way that they could have handled that. And – But, Josh, you are right that this is just a perfect Kawhi move. Of course this is dragging on.
Right.
I mean, this guy's a robot. He sincerely is.
I think it's yeah.
He's an amazing ball
player. I think it's time to just make the decision and move on. But here's one funny thing, John. I'm sure you followed this, too. Because I've been curious if people get their inside info. And I've been told that Kawhi's camp has been so tight-lipped about it that they've even warned teams, hey, if anything gets out anywhere, just consider yourself eliminated. So it's one of those things where they are trying to really seal this up so much so nobody leaks out any info. But you know how some of these shows have the former players who are to some degree tied into it, and everyone's just kind of trying to get the scoop and really trying to talk maybe third-hand to talk to who they know and try to nail down some level of scoop on this.
Yeah.
And I've heard two different things, and what do you think about this, John? The two things I've heard, which I have found interesting, from the reporter's point of view, whether it's Wojciechowski, but the most like esteemed reporters with the best reputations, to their knowledge, it seems like everything they're hearing is Lakers. And yet on the player's side, where it's, whether it's Jalen Rose. Kendrick Perkins, they're saying Raptors. So it's like, who do you trust on this? When it's kind of funny, you would think the reputable media guys are maybe going to have the better sources, but these players who are tied into it would know. What I'm hearing in the Raptors, they say he's eligible for like a 2-year deal.
Yeah, that's what I think's going
to
happen.
Pay him a zillion, and then the 2-year deal sets him up to be eligible for like the ultra super max, which is the most he could get paid. But it'd be like two years at almost $40 million per anyway. And who knows? He may leave after the two. But as the Raptors go, that's the route that everyone's saying might happen, or Lakers, they can just throw all the money at him. But
I mean, the Clippers are still technically in this, but are they?
Yeah, I don't think so. But I also think, in what world is that where, like, you go to the Raptors, you win a championship in your first year, to just be a hero there forever, never pay for a meal or drink again your entire life. The guy could just be a folk hero, and it's like a toss-up as to whether he stays.
No, I know. It's funny. You cement yourself as the greatest Raptor of all time, or you cement yourself as the ninth greatest Laker of all time.
Right. What do you think of this, John, especially with Kawhi, in the manner in which he is kind of shy and doesn't like the limelight? Isn't Toronto perfect?
I think it's a perfect situation.
The limelight only comes once a year, the playoffs. Yeah. The whole regular season, he can just be half anonymous.
Yeah.
Because Toronto gets no press.
I saw someone talking, who knows, I forget who it was, but saying Toronto's all, they don't care about basketball, it's always a hockey town. Yeah, sure, it's a hockey town, I get that. But did you see these people this past year?
Right.
I mean, it was crazy.
Jurassic
I loved it.
Jurassic Park was crazy.
It really was, and it was, it hurt as a Sixer fan to see that team that was so close to being defeated by the Sixers go on to win this whole thing. But I would, not that he's looking for my respect, but I would respect the hell out of him if he just stayed in Toronto.
Well, I think,
and I don't want him to. I want him to get out of the East.
Well, everybody would. Everybody would actually respect him if he went anywhere but the Lakers.
Yeah.
Go to the Lakers. The Clippers is the easy. I mean.
And what do you think, especially as much as he and general disapproval Kevin Durant got for doing it, this is sort of like part two of that. He's going to be the same thing. As much as everyone seems to have a different reputation or feeling about Kawhi, if he does that, people are going to do the same. They're going to say it's weak. He's going to, he, more than he bargained for, get that feedback.
Well, and the guy that doesn't want any attention and doesn't want any of that, I mean, why would you put yourself up to that? That's why I think the Lakers
are
out. Do
we know he doesn't want attention? I mean, he wears shirts that say Boardman gets paid or whatever.
Yeah.
Look
at every interview he's ever had since college.
No, I get it. I get the interviews and everything, but you still want to ball out. You still want to show out when you're out there. And does he want to go share the limelight with not only Anthony Davis but literally LeBron James? I mean, I would. I mean, if you go play for the Lakers with those two guys, and he has a chance to be a three-time world championship champion with three different teams, and would probably be the MVP again.
He would make LeBron the same person.
Yeah, well, it's true. But I'm saying if he was the Finals MVP again.
Yeah.
But as much as I would hate to see him on the Lakers, that'd be really interesting to watch.
Yeah, I'm curious what's taken so long to, you know, with his decision, but I also found it interesting as soon as free agency opened last Sunday night, it just bingo. It's kind of funny. For all the mixed feelings there's been about Durant, and I was among those who thought it was a weak move or whatever, man, he moved immediately. Sunday night, they're like, ready, set, go, and Durant's like, that's, see ya. Yeah. And it's like, that was that. I mean, he was one of the first to announce it, and then everyone, you got Kyrie moving.
I loved Klay Thompson's announcement.
And I just thought was interesting, all the movement. It's such a different day and age that we live in the NBA now. But, John, what do you think? I equate this to baseball free agency. Many years ago, it was kind of funny. If you were like Jamie Moyer or somebody, if you were like a left-handed starter who could throw five innings, it didn't even matter if your record was 9-15.
Yeah.
And you would just get $1 zillion thrown at you. These days, you know what I'd love to be is the NBA player in a year like this who just averages like 12-8 and is available.
Oh,
that
yeah.
player was getting, you know,
it's unbelievable.
$20 million a year thrown at. Some of the insane contracts
really
out there. I mean, for a moment, ignoring the high-ranked guys, I just love to see the middle-of-the-road free agents just – getting king ransoms thrown at him.
It's insane. It is amazing.
And
J.J. Redick got, 2 years, $23
million? Yeah.
I mean, that'll just show you right there.
And baseball's done a complete 180 from what you were saying. I mean, if we were talking about this time last year, and you said Dallas Keuchel was not going to sign until this time next year, you'd say I was, you know, just crazy.
Yes, no,
you know,
I know.
Harper signing during spring training.
Yeah.
That you.
They have it completely backwards.
At 12:01 or 6:01 or whatever, yeah. Everybody was signing.
And it was something on Sunday, as a Sixer fan, which I am, wondering about Jimmy Butler, wondering about Tobias Harris. And then all of a sudden, we get Al Horford falls. Al Horford falls into our lap. And it just, it really is. I love the way that it's set up that you're going to know right away unless you're Kawhi. Danny Green. Do you think Danny Green's attached to whatever Kawhi does?
Not attached necessarily, but he's, you know, attached indirectly, meaning, of course, if, you know, wherever Kawhi signs, I mean, he may be a complimentary piece that goes along with him, but for instance, if he doesn't sign with the Raptors, he could get more money there. So it's one of those wait and see things where his fate is sort of tied to what Kawhi does, but, you know, he could be, who knows, he could be sort of the right-hand guy that Kawhi insisted, you know, team takes as well. We'll see.
Yeah.
The Jimmy Butler to Miami just kind of surprised me.
It kind of stuck.
What do you think? I was surprised. What's funny, too, is especially with all those late-season moves the Sixers made, they had both of them. I thought it was weird because I'm really torn on that because I thought Butler, again, he's getting a reputation as a malcontent in the locker room and not an easy teammate. He's known as a ball stopper on offense a lot of people don't like. But you know what he's also a hugely clutch player who comes in. He's a very difficult shot maker, and he's a guy you can count on to come through in the winning time. And of those two guys, like, yeah, there's probably room for one of those, you know, sheriffs in town or whatever. I thought they'd keep Butler. I was surprised that they moved him and kept Harris.
I don't think it was an either-or type deal.
But how about, I also thought – the determining factor, I thought, would be the camaraderie he seemed to share with Embiid and pushing him to the next level.
And Redick had that same thing. I was surprised to see both of them go. But all indications are they offered him the max, 5-year max.
Butler?
And he turned it down. So at some point it falls on him. When the Sixers said, we're out of the Jimmy Butler business, I knew that there were some hurt feelings right there.
Right.
But when you get the sign and trade and get Josh Richardson back, who by all accounts is a younger – obviously he's not as good as Jimmy Butler, but he's just a younger version – who can do a lot of the same things, and you add an Al Horford, who, let's be honest, has been kicking Embiid's ass for 3 years.
Right.
And so you eliminate that part.
You don't have to defend him anymore.
Don't have to defend him, and he can mentor.
I feel like Al Horford, though, has been the underappreciated ski mask wearing guy of the NBA. The past, he's making $30 million a year for 13-7.
Yeah,
he's averaged 13-7 like three straight years for $30 million.
But what that
per?
Guy? But that guy brings so much more to the table. Is kind of what I'm saying is.
Oh, it's the leadership.
It's the leadership. It's the defense. It's the smarts. It's just everything. The guy is just a solid dude. There's, but you're right. $30 million.
$30 million for 13 and 17. I'm just saying, I say that after people just totally panned Carmelo Anthony for opting in for that last year he was entitled to for like $27 million. You know, 20, even his
he's
last
gotta
year.
He's got to be a Laker, right?
His worst year ever with the Thunder, he still averaged 17 points a game. It's not as if the guy was just, you know, a complete scrub. But
I hope he goes to the Lakers because that's the championship killer.
That would be so funny.
Some of the other stuff, like, again, some of the players.
My voice is pretty deep tonight.
Who make a difference and switch uniforms, or for instance, Enes Kanter. We saw what a huge pickup he was for the Blazers, and they were so easy to just let him go. Yeah.
The Blazers gave him 10 minutes to make his decision.
Allegedly. But whatever it was, Kanter wasn't happy about it, and that's why he ditched to the Celtics.
Well, I mean, you get Hassan Whiteside up there, that's an improvement over Kanter. Kanter's a great player.
Is it, though? Yeah, because that's the whole thing, is that he hasn't been a hard worker. He hasn't.
You know, I think if you get in the right environment where you don't have to be the guy, which he kind of was down there. I mean, I know it's Dwayne Wade's team, but you put him around that backcourt.
Well,
who else?
I think it's going to be Dame perfect. Lillard's team. So yeah. I mean, it's the same thing, but younger.
But the difference is it's a younger team. It's Dwayne Wade's team, but he was on the way out.
All right, we're going to go off to a quick traffic report. Please join us again in just a minute here, William Hill Sports Show, ESPN 94.5 FM. All right, welcome back to the Wingo Sports Show, ESPN 94.5 FM. Again, Josh Nagle, John Stevens, Tom Thompson here. Before the break, we got into some of the comings and goings of this NBA free agency period. Guys, one thing we didn't talk about, we sort of just mentioned during the break, is how the Golden State Warriors did. It was funny, given that Durant left, and you got your Klay Thompson's going to be shelved for a while with this injury, and it looks like they might be in a state of flux for a while. But we seem to be in agreement. I kind of like what they did. The sign and trade for D'Angelo Russell was huge because you don't end up just losing Durant for nothing. And on the plus side, Durant gets the money he wants, so he didn't have to leave for lesser money in another market. But you don't end up having to let a huge superstar go with nothing in return.
Yeah.
And especially during the time Thompson's out. As you know, he's quickly evolved into a great two-way guard. Russell gets at the basket. The way he plays, creating off the dribble, not only it's going to be one of those things where I think it's mutually beneficial, because not only can he draw some defense and kick out, but teams aren't going to be real eager on letting Curry have open threes, but it cuts both ways. Since they'll pay attention to the perimeter, Russell will have his way where sometimes no help's coming and his scoring might go up. I think he's a good fit in the short term. I admit it, they need to rebuild their depth. I wasn't wild at all about their first-round draft pick, Jordan Poole. What a reach.
Yeah.
I think they could have done better than that, but they need to keep building their depth. But on top of that, we mentioned a guy who was coming on strong, Willie Cauley-Stein, who basically – the Kings more or less let Cousins go so he could thrive and be the main guy. Didn't put up bad numbers at all. So when you've got sort of limited, you're sort of rebuilding and you're giving out max contracts to Klay Thompson, you don't have a lot of money to work with. I thought the Warriors overall did pretty well.
I do too. It's a really interesting fit with the step that D'Angelo Russell took last year to see what he can become. And if you play alongside those guys, I think you can work. I really do think you can work. I'm really interested to see if they don't flip him. I still think that's a definite possibility.
And what do you think? What struck me is we'll see how well he does, but I think they should keep him. But even until Klay Thompson comes back, people are talking, the Warriors might be a fringe playoff team. I think they're a playoff team. I mean, so Curry, Russell, Draymond Green, Thompson will come back halfway in. Now Willie Cauley-Stein. I mean, again, they need to build. We'll see how the roster shapes out. But I just don't think you can just assume they're just done. Let's talk real quick about the future odds. I think it's interesting, of course, because it suggests, based on how big the bets are coming in on certain teams and what the odds makers clearly believe are going to happen. So the Lakers, just a couple days ago, they're like 3-1. The Lakers now plus 130,
yeah,
just above even
unreal.
Money, which shows you there's plenty of sentiment to suggest they think Kawhi Leonard's going to end up there. Your second favorite is the Bucks at plus 650, so 6.5-1. 76ers, 9-1. Golden State, 10-1. So just about a week ago, though, they were like 15-1. I think people are sharp to realize if you hammered them at 15-1, I think you got a pretty good value.
They still almost won the world championship without Kevin Durant. And they've won two, or they won one without him.
One without him.
Yeah.
And Josh and I were talking on the break. If Klay Thompson doesn't get hurt, they force a game 7.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they're going to win that game 7, but they're going to force the game 7. They're going to play their hearts out.
I think they'd have won.
I mean, I would have loved it, but there's experts on ESPN saying the Warriors don't even make the playoffs next year. I mean,
yeah.
Can you definitively name 8 teams that are going to be better than the Warriors when you still have Kerr coaching them? You have Curry and you got Draymond Green, and then picking up Willie Cauley-Stein and getting D'Angelo. I mean,
And Looney's back.
And it's been proven, too, that you need some
Kayvon.
You need some depth there. I mean, let's look at the Lakers, for instance. We talked about just trying to imagine the on-court product. If Kawhi Leonard signed with them, it's like, oh, geez, can you imagine LeBron, Kawhi,
what's that drop
Anthony Davis?
To?
But here's what I'm wondering. One, it goes to show you, as we saw with Golden State, whatever, it basically leaves nickels for anyone. Those guys better stay healthy because you can't pay anyone else. You don't know if there's going to be a supporting cast that could be really – provide the support network that you need. But on top of that, let's face it, LeBron, he did drop. He's almost 35 now. He dropped off a little bit last year. Anthony Davis, now that the spotlight's on him, can he step up and be championship caliber? You know what I mean. I mean, yeah, he was sort of in anonymity for his first few years. So is he capable of being that step-up guy to the spotlight? We already know Kawhi Leonard is. But does he mesh well with LeBron? So to me, it's one of those things where it sounds so daunting on paper. Wait till it looks, till we see how it looks on the court.
Anthony Davis would still... he'd be at least the second option, possibly the third option, right? I mean, if LeBron wants to distribute the basketball, though. LeBron wants to – if those two working together, it's going to be magical. And, yeah, LeBron may have taken a step back, but when you take a step back from God, you know what I mean?
Yeah, he's still viable. My point is the strain, groin thing cost him 2 months. What if he get, he could injury-prone again?
If they were in the playoffs, he would have been playing that whole time. Don't you believe that?
Oh, yeah, they shut him down on purpose when the Lakers got eliminated.
Absolutely,
but
they did.
But still, look, he missed longer than people expected, though.
Yeah, of course he did, but they shut him down. Why play? Why keep going? Yeah. He would have played if that team was in the hunt.
Yeah, talk about some of the other additions, because I don't have it here in front of me, but I thought, Malcolm Brogdon. But I can't believe the Bucks are the second favorite after losing him. He's huge.
Yeah.
He signs on with the Pacers. But look at what the Jazz started doing. They started loading up on guys so much so that you got to start paying attention to that Mike Conley and Bogdanovich.
Yeah.
I think the Celtics, getting Kemba Walker and getting rid of Kyrie, which.
But don't you think, because put it this way, I think Kemba might be the better teammate, and that'd be a better fit because Kyrie is starting to sound like he's immature, wasn't the greatest locker room guy, but purely on court. You're sort of just – they're lateral guys.
Yeah.
Skill-wise.
Now, the Pacers – you mentioned the Pacers. The Pacers are really interesting. Adding Brogdon and you get healthy Oladipo back. But they lost
– top defense
they
in the
lost,
league.
I always forget the guy's name. Who's the guy they lost? Bogdanovich?
Right. He's the one who signed with the Jazz.
Yes, exactly.
He was their leading scorer with Oladipo.
Oh, he was great. He was great, exactly. So if they could have kept him, but I guess Brogdon replaces him. Pacers were the 3 seed last year. That's an interesting team as well. It's hard for me to say. I think the Sixers are the best team in the East, but I think the Sixers are the best team in the East.
And what they do, by the way, so you would know this, because I know on draft day we talked about a little bit, Sixers had so many draft picks, but also just pulled in, shipped in guys in and out so quickly that I didn't even know who they kept when the smoke cleared. So who'd they keep of their draft picks and things like that?
The Sixers?
Yeah.
Thibault?
Oh, the defender from Washington.
Yeah. And
Batiste Thibault.
Yeah, and they still – that's the thing is those trades are still pending. There's still like 4 pending trades.
Oh, okay.
So you don't really know who is in the mix. But now, from last year, they have Shake Milton, I watched the summer league, almost the whole summer league game today, and Zaire Smith from Texas Tech, who was widely considered the best just pure athlete.
I saw him in the summer league game today.
Oh, yeah.
Dunking and
exactly.
Stuff.
Yeah. So you add that type of stuff. If they can, this is their second year, didn't in true Sixer fashion, the rookie doesn't play the first year and, comes back strong. So it's really exciting. They need shooting, though. I think they're in the mix for Kyle Korver. That would help, but he's 39 years old.
I heard he's going to the Lakers.
Yeah, exactly. It's Lakers Sixers.
Right, for a veterans minimum type of guy.
Exactly. Right.
They should just teach Ben Simmons how to shoot.
Listen, it's not that easy, Tom.
They just offered him a max deal, too. So
he can literally do everything else on the floor.
But shoot.
Is shooting that important? Could Magic shoot?
I think if you need
he developed
to, yes.
into a shooter, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what Ben needs to do is figure out a hand that he's going to shoot with. He's left hand dominant, but he also uses that right a lot, and he kind of mixes it up. So
it's also the main general knock on Giannis too. The one,
yeah. Can Giannis shoot? Can LeBron really shoot?
Not when it counts.
This is what I'm saying. This is just this rhetoric, Tommy. It drives me insane.
By the way, I haven't seen any for some reason, it seems so difficult to find these summer league box scores. But to my knowledge, Jordan Caroline hasn't played.
I was watching the Lakers night, run right now.
They were just on.
Yeah.
The other night in the debut, though, it looked like he just sat on the bench in a hoodie the whole game and never got in. And so I guess what I'm saying is, for tracking purposes, I don't know if he's seen any minutes at all or if Cody Martin's seen any minutes. Do we have an update, by the way, guys, on Caleb Martin, too? Is that still
– That's still –
Something that hasn't happened yet?
It hasn't happened. The agent for both Cody and Caleb was indicating that something was in the works, and it's still alive.
He had a second meeting with him last.
It just seems that's a tough situation to go and follow Cody, and when you want to just go do your own thing at this point.
At some point, because you don't necessarily
they're not going to keep both of you
be joined at the hip with your brother your whole life.
Yeah, exactly. There's a set of twins that I know. One went one direction, one went the other direction. And it's kind of what you got to do in life sometimes.
But I'm curious how that turns out, because there was a summer league game just before we came on. And I don't know what's going on with that, but you realize Zion Williamson and R.J. Barrett were playing head-to-head tonight.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious.
I was trying to find out how that
went. This is pretty good. Obviously, top-heavy rookie class, I think a pretty good draft overall. But, again, realize if Anthony Davis hadn't pulled that trade, and we could have played with Zion. We're going to see what happens with R.J. Barrett. You're given the amount of playing time he stands to get right away with the Knicks, and I think he may be the more pro-ready guy. Curious to see how Zion plays out, but just in terms of immediate impact, Barrett could end up – I think he could end up being a Rookie of the Year type of guy.
Is he not the odds-on favorite, or is Zion? Because it was close.
Was it close? I thought Zion was the favorite.
Zion was the favorite.
Okay, but I
think Barrett
take
might
RJ.
Have the more ready, pro-ready game
I think
right
that's,
now.
I think that's absolutely –
And the Knicks need more help.
I thought when the draft order went down, I thought for sure Davis would give a really good consideration to staying to play with Zion. I mean, you're already the man in that city.
Yeah.
You're getting an unbelievable
I thought so, too.
He
said he bailed immediately. It made me think twice about teaming up with him.
Or I thought because the Knicks were after him, let's ship him to New York and get that pick and then get both the Duke players to be there. I mean, that would have been a
get them
great,
Duke boys.
Yeah.
I'm sure you guys heard what I thought was funny, but Enes Kanter, and it was actually meant as a compliment, but he said, well, that's what he's like. I think Zion could be great. You know, they took it out of context, the quotes he gave. You know, who knows, but give it a while, he could be a great player. But he did say something like, but right now, I think, you know, he's a little overhyped. We'll see what happens. But he said for the time being, he's like Julius Randle with hops. You remember that line Kanter said a couple weeks ago? But I thought it was funny how people, you took that. Like, oh, you're knocking him. And then the more they thought about it, well, you know what? Julius Randle with hops might be a superstar.
Oh,
because the real Julius Randle just ended up a season where he averaged 21-9, got a huge deal from the Knicks of all people. It was like, okay, if you sort of imagine that player with enhanced skill set, you're looking at like 25-10.
Who was it the tweet? Was it Enes Kanter that tweeted?
Yeah, it was Kanter. No, he said it in an interview, in a sit-down interview, and it was sort of comical. But then what happened was Randle heard of it. He got a hold of it, like, hold on a second. And they initiated
it. I put 43 on you?
Right. He initiated a tweet exchange that was pretty funny. I guess it was 45.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, hey, slow down a second there, Haas. I did put 45 on you last time we played.
Yeah.
And Cantor's like, oh, right. I do remember that. We won the game. Get out of here. So it was funny. They ended up going back. But it was good natured. And if I will say, too, because you want to say out of context, if you heard the whole Cantor commentary on it, he did say, hey, I think the kid's going to be a great player. Right now, I think he's getting too much hype.
Sure.
And then he made that Randle comparison, which was sort of funny, when in hindsight you realize, you know, might not have been that much of an insult after all, because – Randle's becoming a great player himself.
Yeah.
So, but it was sort of funny, right? All the talk about the Knicks and Madison Square Garden, and they ended up by and large with a pretty big whiff. Although, having said that, I'm not sure I want Durant shelved for 2 years either.
2 years?
Well, you know what I mean. The first full one, then he comes back, and it might not be the same. And
there's a lot of risk right there. I mean, they're just. I mean, even with Klay Thompson as well, obviously, but. But there's something that just doesn't sit well with the whole Durant thing.
Well,
I can't stand Kyrie Irving.
I've been reading a lot about Durant didn't like the treatment in the locker room of the ribbing of other players and his relationship with Draymond Green.
I kind
of
liked where the Nets were headed before that. So it sort of breaks down that whole thing.
But so now, if you're a hypersensitive person, which we knew he was anyways, with the secondary Twitter account and everything. You want to go to the biggest city in the country that is the most scrutinized, and I mean, yeah, it's not the Knicks, but
same
Mets players
market,
get the same
though, right?
Get the same as the Yankee players from those media members. So, and same with Kyrie Irving is he's a little hypersensitive to things too, and
he's immature, right?
Yeah,
I hope it blows up.
I think it will.
But it was interesting, though, right? Because here's the funny thing.
I love their uniforms.
We'll see if he gets healthy or whatever, but Durant understands now. Like, see, he's a sensitive guy. He had no idea the level of vitriol and backlash he was in for doing the Golden State thing. He still got two championships out of it. Now he's like, okay, maybe I'll be part of something that rebuilds. I am curious to see how this plays out because, obviously, if it works out, he'd be given more credit. But Durant, at some point, just wants – you know, whether he admits it or not, he kind of seeks that approval. And he really does.
Well, and he's going to have his number retired.
Right. But we're going to go off to our last commercial break here. So one more segment coming up. Please join us again. Just a minute. William Hill Radio Show on ESPN 94.5 FM. All right. Welcome back to the last segment. William Hill Sports Show, ESPN 94.5 FM. And Josh Nagel with John Stevens. Tommy Thompson with you. So we sort of wrapped up our NBA free agency segment. A couple more things we're going to hit on. UFC 239 tomorrow night's a huge card. It's what they call International Fight Week. So the UFC goes all out to put a real memorable card as sort of a celebration of that event. And they really do have some good fights. John Jones is fighting tomorrow. He's the official main event against Thiago Santos. They're just looking for anybody at this point who could give John Jones a good fight. For what it's worth, William Hill U.S. odds, Jones is minus $8. So they're not going to make it easy for you to win a bet on him. Santos coming back at plus 550, though, maybe worth a shot. For what it's worth, he's one of those guys that seems to be peaking as he gets older. He's 35-year-old Brazilian with great power. He's earned his shot. He's knocked out four straight guys, and all within, like, the last 8 months, he's been extremely active. So Santos gets a shot. For what it's worth, they had nobody in line. He just beat the other number one guy, Alex Gustafsson. That was the last fight. Gustafsson gave him a great match the first time around. A couple months back, though, he got taken out in the second round. So even Dana White has recently said, like, hey, we're running out of guys who are viable threats to beat this guy. Maybe Santos hangs in there, maybe he doesn't, but whatever. Because there's other action on here. We got probably the best, what's now the most accomplished women's fighter ever, who's Amanda Nunes. She's the bantamweight champion, taking on Holly Holm, who we all know, most famous for knocking out Ronda Rousey and kind of ending some of that mystique that was there. Holly Holm has since struggled a little bit. She's won some, lost a few, but right after beating Rousey, ended up losing like three straight.
Three.
Yeah, she's won some since, but those were all difficult. I mean, for every fight she's in is against a world-class opponent. We'd like to see her get back on track. Again, like most opponents are, I think she's a little outmatched by Nunes, just pure strength and overwhelming striking ability. But Holm's got the kickboxing, so we'll see. But those are two big fights, so probably the greatest living fighters right now in each division, men and women. So you got John Jones, you got Amanda Nunes on there, and then there's the fight I mentioned before, Tommy, who I think probably has the most curiosity behind it, and that's Jorge Masvidal against Ben Askren, where Askren's the wrestling guy who just for years was been trying to break into the UFC, just got a contract a few months back, and he had his first fight. You guys have probably heard the first fight he had against Robbie Lawler with a real controversial ending where he was actually close to being finished himself. The fight was almost stopped because he was being knocked out. Then he comes back and lands a choke hold toward the end of the first round. Anyhow, this is just his second fight in the UFC, going up against Masvidal, real experienced veteran, and he's coming off a knockout of Darren Till, who was sort of, I thought was hilarious because he was sort of the UFC's golden boy, completely overhyped, the young kid from the UK who was undefeated. First he got knocked out by Tyron Woodley in the title shot that he got they didn't really deserve, but then he lost again in his home turf, the UK. Masvidal goes over there and knocks him out cold, so they got this shot, but those two guys are clashing. So if you ever put it this way, if you ever thought about paying whatever pay-per-view once a year on a UFC card, this is the one. The whole main event card is going to be great. I think the preliminaries are solid too, and if you want to come down to the Club Kale Neva, Ken isn't here, or otherwise I'm sure he would have promoted this, but huge thing where you can just come down, pay the $15 door fee, which covers your drinks and your food and the whole card. And I got to tell you, it's worth it, and especially now with the new platforms on ESPN, sometimes it's hard. Right? I don't even have like a smart TV. I got a tablet. Like, do I want to pay $60 for just that? It's kind of a tough call. I'd like them to still use cable service providers where I could just hit the button and get it. But if you're not, that's what they don't realize, John. A lot of the sports bars are used to having stuff. They don't have smart TVs either.
Yeah.
They have flat screens that still work great, like mine does at home, but it's not one of the new ones that carries this stuff, so I can't get it. So if you're curious about all that but you don't know what to do, club $15 with beers and hot dogs at the Club Caneva, why not?
Oh, absolutely. It's always a great atmosphere for any of those events, especially a fight night atmosphere, and that the events room is completely smoke-free in there, so you don't have to worry about it, anything like that. But if you want to smoke, obviously you can go through the rest of the casino. But no, The UFCs here are so much fun. They always are. I'd be here. I'd be at a concert tomorrow night. Any fights
on the card catching your attention?
Well, anytime John Jones fights, it's an event. Anytime that, you know, you can watch, you know, the man, it doesn't matter who he's fighting.
Right. I mean, you would like a competitive fight, but at this point in time, he's going to be that big of a chalk no matter what you do. But I think Santos is worth taking a look at for that big of odds.
Santos, I definitely like for just the odds a little bit. I mean, I think Jones is going to beat him. But, I mean, if you're looking for value, I think there's some value in betting him. And we were talking about it earlier of Holly Holm, you know, getting plus $3 is, to me, a lot.
She's proven as a huge underdog. She's viable. She's live.
Yep. And, I mean, I think she's fighting with a chip on her shoulder, as that's the only fight really that's relevant that she's won is beating Ronda Rousey, which, you know, it's the biggest one out there.
Put it this way, for what it's worth, just for comparison's sake, and I think it's a fair analogy, but it's like saying, oh, Buster Douglas, his only big win of his year, you know, career was over Mike Tyson. Well, that was huge. He ended a legacy. You know, he beat the guy
everyone thought
was invincible. Right. And for what it's worth, Douglas ended up having a decent career after that. Of course, he lost to Evander. But it's like, hey, just say, hey, you're the person who dethroned Ronda Rousey at a time when nobody thought it was possible. And she's still good. It's just, she's, like I said, she fights world-class opponents every time out. So that's going to be hard. But some other good ones on there, by the way. So Luke Rockhold, you know, was the champion not too long ago at welterweight. He's moving up. He's moving up to light heavy for the first time. That's 205. It's a whole different world in terms of the punching power and everything like that. He's got a tough opponent. You mentioned you were interested in Diego Sanchez and Michael Chiesa.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I agree. I think Sanchez won his last couple of fights. He's too big of an underdog here. Chiesa's okay, but that's way too steep of a price. So.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of value in that one, too.
I remember Diego Sanchez on that first season of The Ultimate Fighter.
And you know what he did in his last fight? He mauled Mickey Gall. Mickey Gall was a huge...
Yeah.
Favorite, and he just smashed him in the first round.
Yeah.
So,
Mickey Gall, who beat up CM Punk.
I thought it was funny, by the way, because Mickey Gall just got a little too full of himself because he's a talented kid, and he had
the gall of that guy.
He had some potential, right? But they threw him. I say they threw him. He threw himself to the wolves pretty fast, though. Because he tried to capitalize on the CM Punk fame that he got, which is fine. He'll always still be the guy who beat him, but. He's shown some real potential, too, this young guy from Brooklyn with a lot of jiu-jitsu and striking. So he kept saying, hey, I want this or that guy. They gave him the fights he wanted. What was kind of funny is now, I mean, he may still have some viable fights ahead of him, but he's lost twice, and each time he lost, it wasn't pretty. But Diego Sanchez took care of him in short order.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of value on a lot of these fighters that are getting plus money. I mean, if you wanted to throw a little 3-4-team round robin there.
Yeah, you could. And for what it's worth, last week's card – was a pretty decent card, too, but it was pretty much all chalk, which you don't see that often in the UFC, which means this time it's bound to change back. So especially in the main event, and I made the wrong call last week with, you know, Francis Ngannou and Junior Dos Santos, who I thought had a chance. But it was pretty much, you know, just right on down the line with the chalk bringing home the money, which means, to me, almost without a doubt, tomorrow night's card is going to show some underdogs are going to have their day. It just, of course, is a matter of which ones, you know, come in and get the money. But I do believe, again, Holly Holm's live, you know, Diego Sanchez. I think Jorge Masvidal is live again against Ben Askren, although most people, you know, tend to prefer the wrestler in that matchup. So, again, UFC 239 tomorrow night, Club Caldeva, $15 gets you in. And you might as well, because I figure, you know, it's a great card to see, and that's just a quarter of the price you would pay at home, plus you get food and beverage. So, come on down. I'm sure that's one of those things, John. I know you and I have both done it, but given the event room, there's limited seating. If you want to come down and get it, you should do it pretty early.
You should come, I'd say, at least by about 5:30. Right. Especially with, you know, the Chicken Week Festival is going on downtown, so there's going to be more people here than usual as it is.
Right. So one other little – we're running out of time here quickly, but one little shout-out we want to give. We've been doing this. I'll credit Ken all along. He's been all over Women's World Cup from the start. We talk about the odds every week. We're down to the championship match Sunday. So we're going to have USA against the Netherlands. USA is a minus 280 favorite. John, one thing we haven't mentioned, even with just two matches to go, and basically the final four reset odds, you could have had the USA at minus 150. Now they're at minus 280 in this game, which just shows you at any point in time you could have jumped on them earlier for a real, you know, discount price compared to what we're seeing here. But let's go over USA. Netherlands is the up-and-coming team that just hasn't lost it yet. They're young. They're efficient on offense. But, man, USA minus 280 on the money line. Netherlands plus $8, so 8-1 just to win the one match in a low-scoring game. The draw in regulation, plus 205. USA -145, plus one goal with Netherlands is +125. So those are all the ways you can play it. You can kind of use a little point spread in there, or you can win it straight up. From everything you've seen, where would you play this game?
I'd play the regulation draw is what I would
That's
play.
Not bad.
+205. And
8-1, I'd take a shot. I'd have to take a shot.
You have to take a shot. I mean, that team's here for a reason, you know. And they've
sprung some upsets along the way. It's a good young team.
They absolutely have. And, you know, I think the USA is clearly the best team, but there's a lot of value there. And, you don't want to root against the USA.
Tommy, what do you think?
I think USA wins it. Just talking about it earlier, there's been 8 World Cups. And if USA wins, that's going to be their 4th.
Yeah.
Half of them. And this line for the draw for the three-way started off at +350. So, I mean, there's been a lot of change there, which, you know, I'm gonna lean towards just betting USA straight up to win in regulation.
All right. Another thing you mentioned, and again, like I said, I think 8-1 in a team with such a low-scoring game is too good to pass up on. But I might also take – I mean, you could pocket a goal for plus money, but – USA could be a big soccer week for both teams because USA just wrapped up the Gold Cup, you know, last night, which we know after not qualifying for the World Cup, the USA is just trying to kind of rebuild the program here, but that's a nice thing. Not the super world-class competition in that Gold Cup, but nonetheless, somebody had to win it to beat Jamaica 3-1, so USA men appear to be back on track. So that just about does it for this week's edition of the William Hill Racing Sports Show, so thanks for joining us. But remember to come in for Pro Pick'em right now. $25 NFL entries, you can get them right now. So you might as well sign up before the lines kick in and, you know, it gets crazy at the sports book. And also
come get some wings.
Wing Fest, go down, check out the Calneva, and join us next week again.
Thanks for joining us for the William Hill Sports Show. Be sure to tune in again next Friday at 5 p.m. for all the action. This is KUUB Sun Valley, ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM.